Hi, I'm Connor, and this is Learn English with Everest, a podcast where I chat to native English speakers in real, unscripted English, and then, step by step, explore the language used. This episode is the second in our mini-series about the Cambridge exams, the Advanced and the First, also called the CAE and the FCE. Last week, we looked at the speaking exam, and this week, it's all about reading. Joining me this week is Rachel, a teacher here in Everest, who has taught lots and lots of students to do the Cambridge First and Advanced exams. And we're going to give you some tips and advice about improving your reading skills and go through the exam in detail. And along the way, you will learn lots of useful vocabulary, expressions, and other hints and tips for the exam. And if you miss anything, it is all on the website, everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. So that's everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. So before we begin, I'll just remind you of the structure of the exam, if you're not too familiar with it. So the paper is the use of English and reading paper. So it's got two parts. It's got the use of English part, which is grammar, basically grammar and vocabulary. And then it's got the reading half, which is what we're going to talk about today. So you have an hour and a half for the advanced exam or an hour and 15 minutes for the first exam. They both have four use of English sections. And then the advanced exam has four reading sections and the first has three reading sections. So they're more or less the same. There's just one section that's in the advanced exam that's not in the first exam. So in this episode, we'll be looking at that second half, at parts 5 to 8 or 5 to 7 in the first exam. So first of all, I talked to Rachel about some ways to improve your reading skills more generally. This week, we have Rachel on the show. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, how are you doing?
Not too bad. So, Rachel, we were going to talk a little bit about reading more generally. So, obviously, if you want to get a great score on the Cambridge exam, there's kind of two things you need to do. One is to really specifically practice your exams and do very Cambridge-specific things. And you can do that in a short space of time. And then the other much more general thing to do is to really practice your reading in the months leading up to the exam. And there are lots of things, I guess, you can do. So would you have some suggestions about good ways to improve your reading skills or things that would help you on the exam?
Yeah, I mean, there's loads of ways that you can improve your reading. First of all, obviously the best way to improve is to actually read. If you set aside some time every day where you actually practice your reading and try to read things that interest you. So there's such a variety of texts, reading newspapers, magazines, you know, books that you like.
Yeah, because I think like a lot of people maybe, like if you never read the news in your own language, there's no point really forcing yourself to read the news every day in another language because you're just going to get really bored and you just won't do it.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to read it a little bit because you do need a sort of wide variety of texts. There might be something that's more news-based, something that's more opinion-based, or there will be something that's more opinion-based and so on the exam. So you do need to read widely, but I think you need to be motivated, maybe read things you like.
Yeah, like definitely if there's books that you have read in your own language, you could possibly then read them in English because then you're familiar with them and the characters. So it might help you and encourage you because you obviously like the texts that you've read them before.
Yeah, and it's easier to get into if you kind of know the plot and you know the characters and things like that.
Exactly, yeah. But I mean, you do need to read things like news, even if you don't like it so much. Just make a little bit of an effort to read every now and again, like a news story here and there.
Yeah.
But like, you can definitely find things that you are interested in. You could also try things like graded readers.
How do they work exactly?
So to be graded to the level of reading or the English level that you're at.
Yeah.
You can also find texts such as short stories where you have it in English and then you have the page in your own language opposite it, which is a great option as well.
Yeah. So the kind of, you have the translation. I think you kind of maybe you need to do both types of reading, the very kind of
close reading, where you are maybe looking at translations and definitions and you're looking up words as you go, which is kind of slow and boring, mm-hmm. and it's not very good as a reading for enjoyment activity, but it's good as a improving your English reading activity. But then you maybe also need to do things when you just read and you forget about looking up the words, and you know, you maybe just read a story and enjoy the story.
Yeah, because you can get so bogged down and frustrated if you're trying to translate every single word that you don't know in a sentence.
Yeah.
So you really do need to just say, okay, I'm going to read this for understanding, and just read through it, kind of skipping over the words that you don't know, coming to the end of the page and saying, okay, what did I understand from that page? And just to be satisfied with getting the gist of what the book is talking about.
So lots of good ideas there to get you started. Firstly, read widely, read everything, and read things that interest you. So Rachel says, don't get bogged down. So if you get bogged down, you get stuck trying to do something that you just can't do. So, you know, maybe you're trying to solve a problem and you try and you try and you try and you just get really frustrated because you can't find the answer. This is to get bogged down. Rachel also mentions reading for the gist, G-I-S-T. So this is a key skill. The gist of something is the sort of general idea of something, not in any detail. So an exam, like the first or advanced, is all about the gist. You just don't really have time to read things in lots and lots of detail. You need to just understand the general meaning. And we use this expression more generally as well. It's not just about exams. So, you know, your friend might say, so, do you understand what I mean? And you might say, well, I don't understand everything, but, you know, I get the gist. That's fine. So I get the general idea. So let's get back then to gist reading and to talking about things in context.
Yeah, because that's a big skill in both the first and the advanced exam, is you don't have a dictionary, you don't have the time to look up or the ability to look up words. So you do have to be able to read a text, and there will always be words in every text that you don't understand. There's a real skill in sort of understanding words from the context as well.
Yeah, exactly. So kind of reading around it and trying to get clues from the rest of the sentence, and not just getting frustrated and you know, feeling tense and nervous because there's that one word in the sentence that you don't know. A lot of the time you don't need to know all of the words in order to answer the questions or to get the idea of it.
And would there be other texts that you would recommend other than, say, like fiction, novels, short stories, graded readers, and then news was the other one, whether that's newspapers or online or whatever. What other type of texts would be good to practice with?
So you could try comics and graphic novels as well. So you can use the pictures, and they're just a little bit more fun and interesting to maybe read to get you interested as well in it. So
yeah. Have you ever read comics in other languages or?
No,
yeah,
I'm stuck to Calvin and Hobbes really. So
yeah, I've read Calvin and Hobbes in Italian, and it's great. Like it's really good because you have the pictures obviously to help you guide the translations, and then you have maybe your own knowledge if you've read the cartoon or you know the characters in the cartoon. So even though maybe the language might be very colloquial or not massively familiar, it's a really good way of practicing a language that way, because you have all these extra clues that you don't have when it's just text on a page. Mm-hmm. But unlike, say, the subtitles on a film, where you just kind of, I mean, if we're honest, if you're watching a film in your own language with subtitles in English, you're not reading the subtitles in English. Nobody does that. Maybe in English with subtitles in English is good as well. And that's kind of reading practice too. As you mentioned as well, a book that you've maybe already read the book in your language, or even maybe a book that you've read in a series. So if you read the first book in a series and then you read not the same book again, but you read the second book in English after reading the first book in your own language, then it's maybe a nice kind of halfway house. You know, maybe the characters, the style, the tone, the kind of what type of book it is, but you don't know the plot itself. So maybe you don't get as bored because you've already read the book or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be a continuation, but it would also be some new information that would keep you interested then. Because I guess if you are rereading a text that you've already read before, you mightn't be so excited about it. So.
Yeah, or you kind of skip over bits because you're like, oh, I know what happens.
Yeah. On to the next chapter.
Moving on.
So read books, read comics, read newspapers, magazines, whatever you like. Just read. It's all about motivation as well. If you don't like reading fiction in your language, well, then you're probably not going to want to read it in English either. So don't. Read a little bit because you need the practice, but concentrate on things that you do like. If you like fashion, then read fashion magazines. If you study a subject in university, then read academic journals, read about science, read a blog about a topic. Whatever you like, whatever you're interested in, then you'll be motivated. And I said in the last section that reading a book in a series was a good halfway house. So this is another useful expression, a halfway house, when something is a good sort of middle point between two things. So here, reading a new book, but in a familiar series, is a good halfway house. It's not completely new, but it's a little bit new. It's a good compromise. So these are some general reading tips, but Rachel and I also discussed the exam. And in this section, we're going to have a look at some tips and strategies for each part of the reading exam.
In terms of the two Cambridge exams we're talking about, the advanced, the CAE, and the first, the FCE, they're basically the same. So the paper is made up of 8 parts in the advanced and 7 in the first. So there's one section which is not on the first exam, which is this cross-text multiple matching section, which we'll talk about in a minute. But both of the exams, the first section is multiple choice. So this is it's the first part of the reading half of the exam. So it's part 5. So you've got 6 questions, you have 4 options for each one, and you have lots of different types of text. There's quite a lot of text to read. So how would you advise doing this section?
Well, first of all, the first thing is to skim through the text. So you're reading the text for general understanding, and so that when you are then looking at the questions, you'll know which part of the text to look back at to find the answer to the question.
Yeah, there's no time to read something and go, wow, that's really interesting. Yeah. You just need to keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. So read it quickly and get a general idea of it. Mm-hmm. And then after that, go and look at your questions. So it's a good idea to look for keywords in those questions.
Yeah.
And underlining can be helpful there to focus you as well when you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when you're looking at the multiple choice, there will be some of the choices that are clearly incorrect from
yeah,
the first reading of it.
Yeah, there's usually one or maybe even two that are quite quickly you can rule them out. You can say, okay, it's definitely not C anyway, mm-hmm. or definitely not A and B. But there's always one, like, there's never one very obvious answer. There's always at least two that are very plausible as answers. And they're often very similar or very mm-hmm. close, and it'd be hard to kind of distinguish them. So what would you say to sort of, how do you make your final selection then?
So you need to make sure that you have evidence from the text, that you can pinpoint part of the text that you know this is where my answer is coming from.
Yeah.
As you said, you can usually be caught 50-50 between two of the options. And just to be careful as well with any distractor words, because they're always going to be in there. So that to try and confuse you away from the correct answer. So just make sure that you can really say 100%, yes, this is the part of the text where I'm getting my answer from.
Yeah, and this is not exclusive to this section. I think all of the entire exam, really, there's lots of parts where, in the same in the listening and in the use of English and stuff, there's always an answer that's like, ooh, look at me, I'm the answer.
Yeah.
And
look at this synonym here.
Yeah, if it's really, really obvious and it's like the same word in the answer as it is in the question or the text, it's almost certainly not the answer, especially at this level, at the level of the first and the advanced. It's too easy if it's, you know, the same word. It's all about synonyms, you know, something that's the same but a different word or rephrased, or maybe it's an idiom or something mm-hmm. like that. I think as well, you should definitely not leave anything blank. It's multiple choice. You don't lose any marks by picking the wrong answer. So if you really don't know, don't stare at the page for 5 minutes. Just to go, oh, look, I don't know. It's definitely not A or B. So between C or D, C. And then just move on to the next one. Because you don't have time for long considered deliberation.
Yeah, exactly. And don't get frustrated or upset or, you know, keep thinking about it. Just pick one and then continue on.
So as you've probably realized by now, time management is really important. You are, as I say in the next section, against the clock. You're racing against the clock. You need to skim the text. You need to read it quickly and just read the surface and look for the answers and then move on. You need to keep going. If you don't know, take a guess and then move on to the next question or the next section. So we're going to move on now. And the next section is the cross-text multiple matching on the advanced exam. Pretty much every student seems to hate this section. It's nearly always the one that students find the most difficult. And yeah, it's hard.
So this is not on the first, it's only in the advanced exam. You have four short texts and you have multiple matching questions. So it's the idea is you have, say, for example, four writers and it says, you know, which writer shares A's opinion or which writer thinks the same as writer C? So you're constantly keeping four texts in your mind at the same time and trying to compare them and stuff. It's really hard.
Yeah.
And it's hard because you're against the clock and that sort of thing. So what would you say about this section to try and help students out?
So again, read through the texts before you take a look at the questions. Try and keep as much of the information in your head as possible. So focus as well on the tone of each of the pieces. So thinking about how they are approaching the subject. So if their opinion is, optimistic, pessimistic, if they're angry, and that will help you then because the questions will be related to their opinions and who agrees or disagrees with each other. So this will help you then to decide if people are optimistic in terms of something and then possibly their opinions could be similar or if someone appears overly, you know, negative or pessimistic towards something.
Yeah, you could even write a few like little notes, a plus or a minus or a smiley face or a sad face. Because if you read the four texts and it's four people writing about cars, and then the first three people all think that this particular car is great and the fourth person thinks there are problems with the car, that's an obvious difference in opinion and there's going to be something about that. Something about writer D is not the same as ABC. And, you know, so like you say, thinking about their opinions and their ideas and the tone of each piece. If there's something that's very obviously different as well, that might be good to underline because that may or may not come up. But this one's hard. It takes a lot of practice.
It does, yeah. And it can be quite tough because you may be as well stuck for time.
Yeah.
So it is a good idea to try and get through your multiple choice as quickly as you can and then give another extra little bit of your time.
Yeah, I think like part five and part eight, you know, the first and the fourth section of the reading half, you could maybe do first because they can be quicker and you can just be tick, 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 and then give yourself more time for the other one in the case of first or two in the case of advanced because they do take a bit longer.
We'll come back to this at the end, but you should definitely think about the order you answer the questions in. So it doesn't have to be in the same order as the questions come. You know, it doesn't have to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You should, to use another idiom, play to your strengths. You should take advantage of something if you're good at it. Do the things you're good at and do them first, for example. So let's have a look at the gapped text.
The next section then, which is on both of the exams, this is the gapped text. So the main difference between the first and the advanced is that on the first exam, it's sentences which have been removed and you have to put them back in. And in the advanced exam, it's paragraphs that's been removed and you have to put them back in. In both cases, there's an extra redundant sentence or paragraph, something that kind of might fit in a few places, but when you really look closely, it doesn't fit. What is this part testing and how do you, what do you kind of need to be thinking about in this section?
Well, you need to be thinking about more than just like the general idea of each of the paragraphs. So you need to be paying attention to things like your subjects, your pronouns, what's being related to. Sometimes as well, paragraphs can carry on giving examples. Mm-hmm. So it might be talking about, for example, like an experiment in one paragraph, and then the paragraph that's going to be filled in there is explaining that experiment or giving examples of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So you need to pay attention to the end of one paragraph and then the beginning line of the next paragraph very closely.
Yeah, because it's all about kind of signposting and referencing. So the bit that you're putting in, the sentence or the paragraph, it needs to be both referencing forward and backwards. So when you're looking for keywords like then and next or this and that that are pointing to something, pronouns need to agree. It can't be Mary said blah, 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 and then the next one is he thought this is nice or that kind of thing, or singular and plural, or all that kind of stuff. So it's really about, it's like a jigsaw. It has to kind of fit in the right place. It's kind of not, it is about meaning, obviously, as well, but it's more so than some of the other sections. It's kind of about your structure, how texts are structured and how they reference other parts of the text. It's about logic, maybe.
So the gap text is like a jigsaw puzzle. Each piece has to fit in exactly or it's not going to work. So let's have a look at the final section, multiple matching.
And then the final part in both exams is the multiple matching section, where you have 10 questions. So there's quite a lot of information, but you're trying to pull out specific details. So what sort of things should you be thinking about for this section?
So you should be thinking about things like idioms and phrasal verbs, synonyms that would come up in your questions and in the text.
Yeah, it's unlikely that there's going to be the same word. It's not going to be, you know, something like, for example, they might have in the text, it says something about investigating a problem. And then in the question, it's not going to say investigating a problem. It's going to maybe use a phrasal verb like looking into a problem or looking into an issue, or it might use an idiom, which means the same thing. So you're looking all the time for close synonyms and similar meanings, not for the words that are in the question.
And in fact, if you do see the words that are in the questions, you should be very cautious of that, because it's probably a distractor.
Yes, yeah. If you see the word investigate and you're looking for investigating, you should be very, very dubious, because they'll often put those sort of words in the wrong section. Mm-hmm. And in that case, it'll be maybe half of it will be right, but it'll be referring to the wrong thing or something like that. You've got four sections to do, or three sections to do, and the whole exam also includes use of English. So you've got quite a lot going on in an hour and a half or an hour and 15 minutes. You have a pretty limited amount of time for each one. I think, would it be fair to say, I don't know, personally, students I've taught tend to really not like the cross-text multiple matching one.
Yes.
And maybe not so much the gapped text, the filling in the paragraphs and the sentences.
Yeah. So there's kind of conflicting ideas in terms of which you should do first. So often it's a good idea to get the ones, you know, your multiple choice done quickly, and then to move on so you can allocate a little bit more time to the ones that, yeah, you don't like so much, or you may need more time for.
Yeah, I guess it's going to differ from student to student, and whether you want to maybe do all the reading stuff first, and then the use of English stuff, or the other way around, or...
That's an interesting one as well. I often tend to recommend that you get your... do your reading first and then go to the use of English.
Yeah.
So some people would recommend like going 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yeah. So. Just work backwards. Yeah, I mean, because I assume you're a lot of students who maybe haven't put too much thought into it will just go into the exam and do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, and do them in order. But that's not necessarily at all the best strategy. And I think it will completely depend on the student. You know, think about your own ability. Are you just generally better at the reading section or the use of English section? And whichever I think you can more confidently finish quicker, then that's just going to give you more time to do the harder sections, or the ones you find harder.
And more confidence and trust in yourself as well, because you feel like, okay, I've done that well.
Yeah. And you don't want to start with the hardest one and despair and go, oh God, I'm never going to
do
this.
The rest of this.
I can't do it. So that's kind of pretty much it, really. So make a plan before you go in, whatever you do. Mm. Think about the best way to do it. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
So that's it. Lots of tips and strategies for your Cambridge reading exam. And hopefully you'll have a good idea now of how to improve your reading skills more generally and how to approach the exam. And don't forget, for all of the tips, for all of the vocabulary, expressions, grammar, everything, you can visit the website everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. And that's it. That's part two of our Cambridge Exams mini-series. Over the next two parts, we will be looking at use of English and writing and listening. Special thanks to my guest this week, Rachel, and thanks also to Nouveau Noise, who provided the theme music for the show. And if you like the show, maybe you could do me a favor. If you're listening on your phone right now, maybe just click share this episode on whatever app you're listening and send it to someone who you think would like the show. It would be great. It would help us find more listeners. So thank you very much, and I'll see you next week.